The following is a sermon from Haven Heights Baptist Church in Wauseon. At Haven Heights, we believe that faith comes through hearing and hearing through the word of Christ. As you listen to this sermon, we pray the Lord would use the preaching of his word to point you to Jesus and to strengthen your faith in him. If you're looking for a church home, we'd love for you to join us on a Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. For more information about our church, go to havenheightsbaptist.org or find us on Facebook. There's no greater privilege that mankind can enjoy than the privilege of being in the presence of the living God. It's the reason why we exist. It is the ultimate purpose, the great end for which God created us. To know the living God and to enjoy his presence is the greatest joy that can be experienced by human beings. To be in and experience the presence of holiness. It is the only thing that can satisfy the desires of our hearts. It's the only thing that can bring us true and lasting fulfillment. It's the only thing that can fulfill all of our hopes. And the presence of God is the only thing that is glorious enough to enthrall us and to satisfy us for all eternity. But don't just take it from me. Listen to what some of the biblical authors have said about being in the presence of God. Psalm 16:11. In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. Or Psalm 27:4. One thing have I asked of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. Psalm 42:1-2. As a deer pants for flowing streams, so pants my soul for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. Psalm 73:25-26. Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Now, in each of those passages, the author is trying to express the inexpressible joy that is to be found in the presence of God himself. The presence of God is ineffable, it's indescribable, overwhelming, staggering, it's sublime, it's awe-inspiring. And God made us, he made man in his own image so that we would have the privilege of knowing and enjoying his very presence. And in the beginning, we did. For Genesis says that God walked with Adam and Eve in the cool of the day. But we know that privilege was lost when Adam and Eve sinned. They were cast out of Eden and therefore cast out of God's presence. And the rest of the Bible from that point forward is a story of how God is working to bring mankind back into his presence, to restore man to the purpose for which he was created. And so this morning we read about the design of the tabernacle, and there we encounter one of the high points in that story, where God is laying out the blueprints, the designs for the building where he will once again dwell with man. And so we see in Exodus 26 the design, the layout, the blueprint for that tent, the tabernacle. And so as I read this in a little bit, there are three things I want us to see as we look at the design of the tabernacle here. And these are going to be my three points in this sermon. And so first, I want us to see that the tabernacle was designed to be a tent befitting of glory. A tent befitting of glory. The second thing I want us to see in the design of the tabernacle is that it was designed to be a place of limited access. A tent of limited access. And the third thing I want us to see is that the tabernacle was designed by God to point to a greater and more perfect tent. A greater and more perfect tent. And with those three points, I want to make this one big point that Jesus alone gives us unrestricted access to God's presence. Jesus alone gives us unrestricted access to God's presence. As I said, the first point I want to make is that the tabernacle was designed to be a tent befitting of glory. And so the first purpose of the tabernacle was to be a place where God and all his glory could once again dwell with man. It was to be a place where man could once again walk with God as he did in Eden, where man could once again experience the fullness of joy that is to be found at God's right hand, to once again experience the pleasures that are in God's presence, where man could once again gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and be satisfied with his presence as with rich food. And in Exodus 26, we see that God himself designed the tabernacle to be a dwelling place that would be befitting of his majesty. God intended to dwell there. And if God was going to dwell there, then the architecture and the aesthetics, the design, the decor, everything about it must be made in such a way that it would be appropriate for the majesty of the one who lived there. Many of you probably know this, but Buckingham Palace is the residence, the dwelling place of the monarch of the United Kingdom. And in the United Kingdom, the monarch is held in the highest esteem. He or she is quite literally royalty. The most illustrious, the most esteemed, the most honorable, the most preeminent position and person in the entire kingdom. And he or she dwells in Buckingham Palace. And if you have ever seen pictures of the interior of Buckingham Palace, if you haven't, go and look it up afterwards today. The interior is designed to communicate something of the majesty of the person who dwells there. It is ornate, it's expensive, it's rare, and it's beautiful. And in all of that, it is communicating the idea that this place is different. This place is set apart from the rest of the world. Because the person who dwells here is different. The person who dwells here is set apart from everybody else. And so it was with the tabernacle. The interior of the tabernacle was ornate. It was expensive. It was rare. It was beautiful. And in that, it was communicating to the people of God that this place was different because the one who dwelt there was different. So just look at verse 1 with me. It says, make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of finely twisted linen and blue, purple, and scarlet yarn with cherubim woven into them by a skilled worker. This is describing the first and interior layer of the tabernacle, of the tent. And it's hard for us to wrap our minds around, but this is describing something that is ornate and expensive and rare. So in the Old Testament, more than any other material, fine linen is associated with the holiness of God. So it is the finest of materials. And it wasn't merely plain material, but it was blue and purple and scarlet. And there were cherubim or angels woven into the fabric of it. And so you can imagine walking in and seeing, looking around and seeing the fine linen over the whole interior, and it's blue and it's scarlet and it's purple, and there are angels woven into it. And it was held together by golden clasps. Look at verse 6. Then make 50 gold clasps and use them to fasten the curtains together so that the tabernacle is a unit. So everything about the interior of the tabernacle was befitting of glory. If you remember Pastor Lance's sermons the past few weeks, as he described the lampstand, the table, the Ark of the Covenant, it is all made of or overlaid with pure gold. Everything inside was expensive and rare and precious and ornate. And it all pointed to the royal and prestigious nature of the one who dwelt there. Now, of course, it's not that the materials and the design itself is what made the tabernacle holy, but the one who dwelt in it is the one who made it holy. And the materials and the design were such that they were reflecting the glory of the Lord. They were appropriate to the holiness of the one who dwelt there. They were setting that place apart for God to dwell there. It was a tent befitting of glory. Exodus 26 goes on. It describes curtains of goat hair and a covering of ram skins and an outer layer that was likely made of some waterproof material like that of a sea cow. And the point of all those outer layers was to protect the interior, to protect the inner layer, to protect the holy place from the outside world. And now notice, this is a small detail, but what were those layers, those outer layers held together with? Not gold, but bronze. That and the materials used, the goat skin, the ram skin, are not as rare, not as expensive, not associated with holiness as fine linen is. And so it's clear the point God is making is that the inside is different from the outside. The inside is better because God dwells there. It's more glorious than the outside. Okay, so we see in the design itself that God is designing the tent to fit or be appropriate to his glory. We also see in the design, this is our second point, that God designed this tent to be a place of limited access. We see this near the end of the passage. So verses 31 through 35 describe two sections inside the tent. There's a smaller section in the back, and then there is the larger front section. The innermost section, the smaller section in the back, is the most holy place. And Exodus 26 tells us that it was inside there, in the most holy place, that the Ark of the Covenant was placed. And this was the place where God dwelt most fully, most gloriously. The place where his presence could be known and felt and enjoyed in all its fullness. That's the second section, the most holy place. Then there's the larger section outside of that, but still inside the tent. And this is known as the holy place. And so this was where the altar of incense was. This is where the lampstand was. And this is where the table of the bread of the presence was. And so it was here that it was still glorious, but not as much so as the most holy place. That's why it's called the holy place and not the most holy place. And now we'll get here next week or the next few weeks or so, but you have the interior of the tent, the most holy place, the holy place, and then you have outside of the tent, the courtyard. And then outside of the courtyard, there was the camp of Israel, and outside the camp of Israel was the rest of the world. And so the idea with these sections is that there are gradations of God's holiness and of his presence. That he dwells most fully, most gloriously, most holy, in the most interior, in the most holy place, and that as you take a step out to the outer sections, it becomes less so. So he is more present, more glorious, more holy in the most holy place, less so in the holy place, even less so in the courtyard outside the tabernacle, even less so outside the courtyard in the camp of Israel, and then even less so beyond the camp of Israel in the broader world. And so the point I'm making with this, and I want us to see, is that every section had some sort of barrier to the outside. So we read in verses 31 through 33 that there was a curtain of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, and again made of finely twisted linen with cherubim woven into it. This was to be hung with golden hooks so that it was separating the holy place from the most holy place. This was the curtain, the veil, that I referenced in the children's lesson. There was a veil separating the most holy place from the holy place, functioning like a keep-out sign. No one can go beyond here. And then in verses 36 and 37, we see that at the entrance of the tent, from the courtyard to the holy place, there was another curtain of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and finely twisted linen. And this is serving the same purpose. It is another keep-out sign. You can't go beyond this point. You can't enter the holy place. And again, we'll get there in a few weeks, but then the courtyard on the outside of the tabernacle at its entrance had a screen, limiting the access of who could enter. And so every one of these barriers was functioning like a giant keep out sign. Only certain people were allowed past each of those points. So to return to our Buckingham Palace illustration, I've never been there, but I would imagine that not just any old person can just waltz into any old room in Buckingham Palace. There are clearance levels. You probably don't have a whole lot of clearance to enter the inner holy places of Buckingham Palace. And to get there, you would need someone to give you access. Likewise, there were clearance levels with the tabernacle. So this is a point I hadn't considered much until I read this text and studied it. But the Israelites, as Pastor Lance has preached on, they gave their riches to build the tabernacle. They received the instructions from God. And then later in Exodus, we'll see that they actually get on with building it. They complete it. And then they couldn't even go in it. The average everyday Israelite could only enter into the courtyard of the tabernacle. The inside was off limits. It was as though God was keeping his people at arm's length. Like we said in the children's lesson, because of your sin, you can't come in. You can't step into my holy presence. You couldn't bear it. You would perish. You would die in the presence of my holiness. And so the average everyday Israelite had to stay on the outside in the courtyard. So just imagine what that would be like, looking at that place, wondering, I just wonder what it looks like in there. I wonder what goes on in there. What must it be like to step foot inside that tent, into the holy place? And even beyond that, what must it be like to step into the most holy place? Even the holy place was a place only priests could go to perform their regular duties to the Lord. And then the most holy place, only one person in all Israel had access, had clearance to enter the most holy place, the high priest. And even then, it was only one time a year on the Day of Atonement. Now, this isn't in this text, but in the New Testament, you start to read about Jesus teaching at the temple, which is the tabernacle, the permanent one that was later built. It says he was teaching in the courts. Well, the place he probably taught was a place they built called the Court of the Gentiles. Non-Jewish people, Gentiles, couldn't even go in the courtyard of the tabernacle. They had to remain on the outside. And so in the temple, a separate area was built for them outside the courtyard. Inasmuch as God designed the tabernacle to be a place fitting of his glory, so also did he design it to be a place of limited access. He designed keep out signs into it, at the most holy place, at the holy place, even at the entrance to the courtyard. And this means that the experience of his people was limited in terms of their experience of the presence of God. Which leads us to our third and final point. The tent was a place of limited access, and because of that, a greater and more perfect tent was needed. So in the designing and making and selling of new products, there's a somewhat shady principle known as planned obsolescence. That sounds confusing, but let me explain it. What that means is that some companies will intentionally design deficiencies or shortcomings into their products. And so inevitably, as consumers buy their products and use their products, they begin to become aware of the flaws that are inherent in them. They're aware of the deficiencies and the shortcomings, and they start to get frustrated. Right now, my phone is a Google Pixel. It has a fingerprint sensor on it. It only works about half the time, and it frustrates me. I don't know if that's intentional on their part, but it might be. Because if Google Pixel came out with the next model and they said, with the new and improved fingerprint sensor, and then I started hearing from people that it works every time. You just put your finger on it and boom, your phone's unlocked instantly. I would be pretty tempted to go buy that. That's what planned obsolescence is. Companies are planning, well, maybe or maybe not, I don't know, planning for their products to become obsolete by designing shortcomings into them. Now, while that might be a somewhat shady and unethical principle for us to practice in our business, it is perfectly good and right for God to do that with the tabernacle. And that is just what he does. He actually designs deficiencies and shortcomings into the original tabernacle, not to serve himself, but to serve us, to lead us to the greater or more perfect tent that would come later. So, what are the shortcomings then of the tabernacle? The deficiencies God designed into it? Now, we don't see these all in Exodus 26 here, but as you read through the rest of Exodus and Leviticus, and it tells about what happens at the tabernacle, you see these deficiencies and these shortcomings. Here are four of them. One, I told you only priests could go into the tabernacle to perform the duties. Well, the priests were imperfect. They were sinners themselves. They needed to be cleansed and have their sin atoned for before they could even step into the tent to perform the daily duties. And so, deficiency number one, there were imperfect priests in the tabernacle. Deficiency number two, the tabernacle, as glorious as it was merely a copy of the heavenly throne room. It wasn't the real thing. It was a copy, a lookalike, a little scaled-down model that reflected a mere fraction of the glory of the real thing. That's the second. It was a copy of the heavenly throne room. Third, the sacrifices performed in the tabernacle were animal sacrifices. So atonement was being made for humans by animals. Not really a one-to-one thing there. How can an animal atone for a human? And as the author of Hebrews points out, they can't. So animal sacrifice. And then the last deficiency designed into it is the temporary atonement. And so the high priest would go into the most holy place one time a year to make atonement for the people of God. And then he'd do it all again next year. And then the year after. The atonement was temporary. It had to be repeated over and over again. So those are four deficiencies or shortcomings that God designed into the tabernacle itself. There were imperfect priests, it was merely a copy of the heavenly throne room, there were animal sacrifices, and the atonement offered by the tabernacle was temporary. Now just really quickly here, listen to Hebrews 9, 11 and 12 with those four deficiencies in mind. Hebrews 9, 11 and 12. But when Christ came as high priest of the good things that are now already here, he went through the greater and more perfect tabernacle that is not made with human hands. That is to say, is not a part of this creation. He did not enter by means of the blood of goats and calves, but he entered the most holy place once and for all by his own blood, thus obtaining eternal redemption. In those two little verses, the author of Hebrews shows how Jesus is the answer to all four of those shortcomings God designed into the first tabernacle. And in so doing, he shows us that God designed it that way intentionally. He planned for the tabernacle to become obsolete because he knew that something far better was coming, something far more effective, something far more glorious. And that was Jesus. So imperfect priests in the tabernacle, well, Jesus comes and he's the true high priest. And though he was tempted in every way that we are, he was without sin. He did not need to atone for his sin. He was perfect. The tabernacle was a copy of the heavenly throne rooms. Well, Jesus, on our behalf, entered not into the temporary, the copy, but entered into the real thing, a greater and more perfect tent, not made with human hands, but into the actual throne room of God himself in the heavens. There were animal sacrifices in the first tabernacle. Well, Jesus, being himself fully man, did not enter the most holy place by the blood of goats and calves and bulls, but by his own blood. That is the blood of a human, just as we are. And he offered his own blood for atonement that actually would take away sin. The tabernacle offered temporary atonement that was repeatedly needed year after year. Hebrews 9:12 tells us that Jesus secured an eternal redemption that does not need repeated. And by his one sacrifice, he has made perfect forever those who belong to him. And what this means for us now is that Jesus alone can give us unrestricted access to God. And I'll close with this illustration. Sometimes it's not about what you know, it's about who you know. You may have heard that. And sometimes all you need to know is the right person. So to think of Buckingham Palace again, let's just say that next week, someone with all the clearance levels in Buckingham Palace, a high official in the British government, comes to our church, and he moves here and becomes a member here for whatever reason. And then he tells us, because you know me, if you come to London with me, I can give you access to everything in Buckingham Palace. That is what Jesus has done for us. He has gone before us into the most holy places. He has all the clearance levels needed and is now at the right hand of God the Father himself. Therefore, all who are trusting in Jesus can now draw near to God in the fullness of his presence and his glory through faith in Jesus. God is no longer keeping us at arm's length. There are no more keep out signs. Jesus has torn that in half when he died on the cross. He is now at the right hand of God the Father, and we have been raised there with him through faith. Jesus gives us VIP access to the presence of God. And so I'll close with this question. Do you know him? Are you putting your faith in the VIP access of Jesus to the presence of God? Because it is Jesus alone who can bring us back to the unrestricted presence of God, just like we were created for. You've been listening to a sermon from Haven Heights Baptist Church in Wauseon. If you're looking for a church home, we'd love for you to join us. We gather on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. For more information about our church, go to havenheightsbaptist.org or find us on Facebook.